My next question is about the World Heritage Committee, which is, of course, very powerful and very influential. And the convention says it was meant to be a professional body, and I'll read you from the convention. States members of the committee shall choose as their representatives persons qualified in the field of the cultural or natural heritage. We've heard this many times, but at the same time, it is an international treaty, and so diplomats will also be present. So the question for you is how you see the balance between professional expertise, which was foreseen in the convention, and diplomatic behavior and activity in the committee. How is the balance, and has it changed over time?
I think it has changed. I mean, I think it's very clear that the diplomatic representatives take the lead now. I guess I've witnessed it over my time going to these sessions. I feel like in the early years when I was going to the meetings, there was much more the technical experts took the floor representing their countries and led the debates much more so than is the case today. I feel like today it's the diplomatic representatives who have the lead. They do have their technical experts sitting with them, and occasionally that person might get a chance to be at the microphone and say a few words, but it seems very limited to me. It seems like the, and a lot of it seems very scripted as well. There's not this sort of kind of dialogue that you would expect if it were just purely technical issues. I think that's gone away largely, which is sad to say, because I do think, that's a part of the fact that the convention is now so well recognized, the stakes are so much higher for whether a site is inscribed or not. So, discussions cannot be relegated to the technical people. It's now become a matter of state and prestige, in the international community. So, in some ways, we're the victims of our own success.
Do you think that all the inscriptions are valid?
I don't. I think there have been some that I really question, where the advisory bodies have said they didn't see outstanding universal value, and it seems to me that the site was inscribed strictly on a political basis. I think we've seen that happen a number of times.
Mm-hmm. Have you given any thought to how it might be, you can't go back, but how you might get a different balance?
That's a tough question because as I said, the technical people are there, and they're almost, in some cases, window dressing. But you can't dictate to a government who's going to speak on their behalf. So, I don't know. I think the upstream process that's been developed might provide some help in the sense that the ECOMOS and IUCN, the advisory bodies, can weigh in earlier before so much has been invested in producing a final nomination, and therefore their views can be given greater weight. So I think that's really probably where we'll find the best solutions, is trying to get more upstream help early on in the nomination process. We recently redid our tentative list back in 2016, and we decided on for the cultural sites. We also worked to some degree with IUCN on the natural sites, but we actually paid ECOMOS to review a group of, I think it was about 10 potential candidates to be added to our tentative list. And they said we were the first state party that had asked them to do that. They were very happy to do it, and I think it was useful for us because, we didn't always agree exactly with what they said, but at least we knew from the beginning what their thoughts were on potential candidates, and we very much relied on their advice in terms of what finally ended up being put on our tentative list.
Let's talk about the General Assembly of States Parties. Is this an effective body?
You know... I have not been going to the General Assembly meetings. I did in the earlier years, but of late, no. I mean, to me, the main thing that always happened at the General Assembly was the election for the committee. Since they switched over to the more regionally based election process, I haven't felt a great need to be there. I don't see what happens at the General Assembly meetings as being all that crucial or, you know, changing the direction of how things are going in the committee. The one good thing about the General Assembly is that it does give every state party, every signatory, the opportunity to speak on equal footing with all the others. So I think that has value, especially because the number of countries able to serve on the committee is so limited.